So hi, great to see you all here today. We've heard some great plenaries, a great panel before us, and I'm very excited for this upcoming panel as well. So I just wanted to introduce myself first. I'm Sindhu Ravi Shankar. I'm the Senior Manager of Technical Initiatives at IAPAC, which means I work largely on the Fast Track Cities Initiative. And I'm very pleased, and it's a pleasure to share the stage with some of my colleagues and people that I've been actually working with who are part of the Fast Track Cities Initiative and who are leaders in their field and engage with the initiative in various ways. So I wanted to welcome you to this panel. It's on Fast Track Cities, using data to optimize local HIV care and prevention continuum. So just to give you a little bit of background first, the Fast Track Cities Initiative was launched on World AIDS Day 2014 by the core partners IAPAC, UNAIDS, UN Habitat, and the City of Paris, with the aim of supporting cities to accelerate their response and reach the 90-90-90 targets by 2020. Currently, we have 64 cities in all regions of the world, from Atlanta to Durban to Rio and Bangkok, and are in ongoing conversations with other cities as well. So now we're talking to London, Berlin, New York, and I see out in the audience some of our biggest supporters, clinician key opinion leaders, and others. So I think I saw Amanda Castell earlier, and Adi Arana, who I just introduced myself to, our clinician KOL in Providence, and our also very own panelist, Sarah Rowan, who's our clinician key opinion leader in Denver. So just to give a bit of context, why cities? Over 50% of people living with HIV reside in cities, and when considering ending the epidemic as a public health threat, cities and local leaders are best equipped to take ownership and to affect change in their local communities. And specifically, data-driven response is key to the initiative and the success of the city's individual HIV response as well. So this includes comprehensive measurement, monitoring, and reporting of data, specifically reporting of data in the public domain. This is imperative for identifying and addressing gaps in the HIV response, prioritizing efforts around the care and prevention continuum, and efficiently allocating resources and creating accountability towards stakeholders and key populations. Equally important as measuring the care continuum is using data to strengthen or optimize each component of the prevention and care continuum. So for example, using data to improve testing coverage, PrEP uptake, retention in care, just to name a few, and we'll hear a lot more about this from our panelists shortly. So I've asked our panelists, we have Sarah Rowan from Denver Health and Albert Liu from San Francisco Department of Public Health, and they'll both discuss how their respective cities are using data to measure and optimize the care and prevention continuum. And then we'll have a demo, we'll conclude with a demo from Ruben Granich on the Fast Track Cities Initiative web portal and the City Dashboard, which is a monitoring and evaluation, communications, and advocacy tool that Fast Track Cities can use. And it's I've been kind of part of the team with them working on it, so I might be a little biased, but it's a really innovative and exciting tool. So we'll keep the presentations pretty concise. 10 minutes, we want to give enough time for you all to engage you in the discussion, get questions, and you know, really get the discussion flowing. So we'll try to keep our remarks and presentations brief, and then we'll open it up to a larger engagement. So first, I just want to introduce Sarah Rowan, representing Denver. Sarah is the Associate Director of HIV and Viral Hepatitis Prevention at Denver Public Health and Assistant Professor of Medicine at University of Colorado, Denver. She's played a key role through Denver Public Health in the city's efforts to measure the HIV care continuum. She's also actively involved with the Fast Track Cities Initiative, as I mentioned, as a clinician key opinion leader for Denver. And I also just wanted to mention, I actually first heard Sarah speak in November. We had a White House meeting that brought together city, county, and state representatives. And since then, I really enjoyed her presentation. And since then, it has been a really great pleasure to continue working with her and have Denver as a Fast Track City and for that to be a reason for me to also continue working with Sarah. So pass it on to you.
Thank you, Sindhu. That was really nice. And thank you to the organizers of this conference for inviting me to speak today. So I'll be talking about Denver's work to become a fast-track city and what it means and what our next steps are. In some ways, you've heard amazing work that many jurisdictions are doing in terms of data to care, and they're reporting and really making their data more granular. So I'm actually going to kick it down a notch and talk about sort of the foundational work that we're doing in Denver to start to make a strategy and to get to that point. And then Al will wow you with San Francisco. But let me give you a snapshot of Denver first. So no conflicts. So this is the snapshot of Denver. You can see that we're situated just east of the mountains in a very mountainous state. We consider Denver Metro as a whole for many purposes, particularly as they relate to HIV care, because there's a lot of migration between these five counties. So the five counties are here in the lower map. Denver County is the oddly shaped one right in the middle. Someone who knows Denver history can explain how that happened. It has to do with an airport. So we have 75% of people living with HIV in Colorado reside in these five counties. That's 7,534 individuals when we censor for death and out-migration. Our epidemic is 88% male, 62% white, 19% Hispanic, 16% black, 73% MSM, 9% MSM IDU, 5% IDU, 4% hetero. Between 2010 and 2014, there were 1,621 new diagnoses in the five-county area, and 32% of those were late diagnoses, so folks who were diagnosed with 200 T-cells or less or else progressed within the first 12 months. So in 90-90-90 speak, we're at 89.7, 78, 87.4. And it's kind of a lot of work to get there, and I'll go through how we've come to those metrics. And then our care continuum, you can see that we go from 89.7% diagnosed to 70% retained to 61% virally suppressed of all those presumed living with HIV in the area. So this is our timeline. In 2015, February, the leadership of IPAC approached Denver Public Health about becoming a fast-track city. In May, we presented this concept to our HIV Planning Council, which represents the Denver TGA, and it was approved unanimously. In June, Denver Public Health and Ben Young from IPAC met with our Department of Environmental Health, which is a branch of the city. They also agreed that this was the right thing to do for our city. So they said Denver Public Health can take this away or take off with this, and we agree. We support it. So we put together a one-pager about what Fast Track Cities is, where Denver is in these 90-90-90 metrics, and the head of our health department met with the mayor, and he said, "This is great. Why haven't I heard about this sooner?" So that was fortunately fairly easy. At the AIDS Walk 2015, our deputy mayor signed the Paris Declaration. And then the state later used the 90-90-90 metrics to form the basis of a proclamation for the statewide goals for ending AIDS. And on World AIDS Day, the state and the city both signed proclamations with the same goals. So it was really a unifying experience across our city, our metro area, and subsequently across the state to say we all care about this. Let's get behind a unified set of goals. So now we're a fast-track city. Okay, now what? So we decided we had to look at the data. How do we collect our data and how do we measure it? Our state health department does surveillance, but we wanted to look more at the Denver metro level. So we have something called our HIV business intelligence tool. We get all the mandated CD4 and viral loads from across the state are funneled from the state health department into this tool. That data is then integrated with some clinical data, with EHRs. We've built in some census data from the community surveys. And so that gives us local access to our data. So how many people are living with HIV in Metro Denver? Seems like a very simple question, but it's hard to find out. So we decided to censor by looking back at the 5 years prior to our index year and to say, if they had a visit in that year, that's probably our denominator of people living with HIV. The difference between how many years you go back kind of gives you a clue to how many people you may be maybe out-migrated or may be not accounted for by this method. How many people living with HIV are undiagnosed? That's hard to do at the local level, so we used CDC estimates for our state, which is where we got 89.7%, knowing that 75 to 80% of new diagnoses happen within our metro area. What defines retention in care? We are defining it for our purposes as one visit in the last 12 months. Viral suppression, were you suppressed at that visit? And then how do we measure disparities? So we had to sort of decide which disparities to measure, and do we use rates, absolute numbers, medians, means? So here's what we came up with. Our data shows us that this is new diagnoses over time by county, and our new diagnoses are going down. Then we looked at progression to AIDS, concurrent AIDS diagnoses, and mean CD4 count. Really, this is the initiative to end the AIDS epidemic, so we thought it was very important to look at our AIDS diagnoses within our region. And we realized we hadn't even celebrated that no one had progressed from HIV to AIDS among those who were HIV diagnosed in 2015. So we didn't know until we looked. So our proportions and numbers of late diagnoses are decreasing. We had no previously diagnosed HIV diagnosed patients progress to AIDS in 2015. But our disparities are pretty stark. And again, it's a matter of how you measure them. But this is our baseline, so now we know what work we need to do. So our Black and Hispanic individuals have significantly higher rates of HIV diagnosis in the Denver Metro. Moving along the care continuum, we can see that we have a pretty big step off when it comes from diagnosis to retention, and then we have less of a step off between retention and viral suppression. So our middle 90, 78%, our final 90 goal, we're at 87.4%. So really, I think that gives us a sense that we need to target our efforts on retention and care. However, as has been previously suggested, I think the folks who are retained but not suppressed may be some of our greatest challenges and also need a lot of attention. We're tracking our time to link, and this is mean, but we'll be tracking it as a median as well. And then we're looking at disparities in viral suppression, and they, of course, still exist. So what do we do next, now that we sort of figured out how we're going to collect the data, what our baseline data is? We've decided we need to put together our HIV monitoring report. And again, this is where I sort of feel humbled by being here with jurisdictions that are so advanced with their monitoring reports. But it's quite a process, and it's so important to your jurisdiction. So we've gathered our HIV diagnoses metrics, divided by demographics, by county, by late diagnoses. We can report them quarterly to our stakeholders. We also had a stakeholder, one of our local health departments, ask, what about diagnoses by transmission category, by month? Which seems, we hadn't thought to do it by month before, but he's terrified of being the leader of the health department with the next Scott County. So it was sort of neat to be able to feed this information right back to him. So we have our first Ending AIDS in Metro Denver report, and we're still sort of finalizing this report and getting feedback and validating the numbers, which is really an intimidating process. And hopefully we'll have a dashboard, not sure when, but that's the goal. And then what are we doing? So that's sort of what we're doing as a fast-track city. We need to report. We need to get our stakeholders together, and we're making progress to get there. What are we doing to impact the care continuum? Prevention and diagnosis. We have pretty extensive PrEP programs, as many places do. We've worked very hard to educate primary care and to give technical assistance for prescribing PrEP. A couple of my colleagues have abstracts here about different PrEP initiatives that we're doing. We're expanding our syringe access sites throughout the Denver Metro. We have, of course, risk reduction and testing. Linkage to care, we have a very strong linkage to care team, and so we'll continue to support them and hopefully fund them to do more PrEP linkage to care. We're developing our data to care program at the local health department level, so we'll be coordinating with clinics, but it's really going to be a health department-driven data to care program. Case coordination has been embedded in our clinics, which is novel for us and very helpful for retention and care. And then for viral suppression, we've really encouraged enrollment in the ACA. Denver's had a tremendous benefit with Medicaid expansion, and subsequently our ADAP is able to do different to help people in different ways because they have more funding. And then retention support really leads to viral suppression. All along this continuum, coordination has been identified to be a big need. We don't currently have an ending AIDS coordinator, ending the AIDS epidemic coordinator, so it's been helpful to really identify how helpful that position could be, and we'll be looking for funding for that. And then monitoring and reporting hopefully will support each of the steps of the continuum. So these are the partners that have come together with the Ending AIDS Epidemic Task Force. The City of Denver with each of its departments, Denver Health, Denver Public Health, Tri-County Health, CDPHE is our state health department, the metro area care providers. We have very strong coalitions between our clinics. Our community-based organizations, similarly, we have excellent relationships, our patients, and IPAC. So it's very exciting in Denver. The stars look very different today, and they will look very different in the near future as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Sarah. That was great. I especially appreciated the description of the indicators and the methods and metrics that you're using for the indicators, because I do know that's something that cities, and not only cities, but other jurisdictions also struggle with. So just seeing the process of how Denver went through that is, I think, hugely helpful for a lot of us in the room. And I urge you all to think about your respective cities and jurisdictions and think about what kinds of sources and methods that might be used to measure these indicators in the care continuum, and continue that discussion into the Q&A session. So thank you. Next, I wanted to introduce Dr. Albert Liu, representing San Francisco. Dr. Liu is a clinical research director at Bridge HIV in the San Francisco Department of Public Health and an assistant professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. Over the last decade, he has led studies on the safety and effectiveness of PrEP and the implementation of PrEP in real-world settings. He currently serves as the co-chair of the PrEP Committee for the San Francisco Getting to Zero Consortium. And I will repeat what Sarah said. I am sure San Francisco is a model city, is a leadership city, and we have a lot to learn, so I'm sure that Albert will wow you.
Thank you, Sindhu. Okay, so I'd also like to thank the organizers for this opportunity to share some of our work in San Francisco, and these are my disclosures. I'm going to start out with an introduction to Getting to Zero Consortium in San Francisco, which is our version of efforts to ending HIV in the city. I'll talk some bit about the data on new HIV diagnoses and the care and PrEP continuum in San Francisco. I'll talk a little bit about how we collect that data and how we're using it to track our progress, as well as identifying gaps and missed opportunities. And then I'll end with two examples of using data to strengthen the continua, both data to care as well as some of our newer efforts around data to PrEP. So our Getting to Zero consortium actually started at World AIDS Day in 2013, when a number of different groups were presenting to the community about their work. And at the end of the session, someone stood up from the community and said, you know, this is all great what you're doing, but are you actually working together? And it became clear that that efforts weren't being coordinated as well as they could be. And so a group of core people got together to form the Getting to Zero Consortium. And the goal is zero new HIV infections, zero HIV deaths, and zero stigma and discrimination. And what Getting to Zero is a multi-sector independent consortium that's working under the principles of collective impact. And the idea of collective impact is that there's different groups, but people have a shared agenda and are working all towards a common goal. And you can see on the right that we've assembled a broad coalition from community advocates and community-based organizations to the public health department, as well as people in research and academia, all working towards the goal. And the vision that people came up with was to become the first municipal jurisdiction to achieve the UNAIDS vision of getting to zero. We did set some shorter-term goals by 2020, a 90% reduction in HIV infections. And to start off the work, the group had a steering committee that came up with the strategic plan, and there were three signature initiatives that that people felt would have the biggest impact on the epidemic. And this included a citywide coordinated PrEP program, rapid ART start, meaning same day offer of initiation of ART with new diagnoses, and then a retention program bolstering patient-centered linkage, engagement, and retention in care. And each of these committees, each of these initiatives was supported by a committee, and there was a fourth committee on stigma, addressing stigma and discrimination that was also formed. And so each of these committees has come up with an action plan, metrics, as well as milestones. And the city has provided funding to get these efforts off the ground. So now I'm going to talk about some of the data sources that we've used to inform our HIV care and prevention efforts. And in San Francisco, we're very fortunate to have a very strong HIV surveillance department that's really created this population cohort of living cases. And that's based on several different data sources, including name-based HIV AIDS case reporting, as well as mandatory viral load and CD4 reporting, which we've heard about. And then something a bit more unique that San Francisco's been doing is every 12 to 18 months, there's a medical chart review that's done of living cases. And this collects a wide range of information on treatment, housing status, demographics, whether people have relocated or changed providers, as well as opportunistic infections. On the tracking the PrEP side of things, we've tried to think about what data sources we can garner, and these include various surveys on PrEP knowledge and use that our different groups are doing, including our STD clinic, as well as various community-based surveys, including adding some questions to NHBS. We started doing queries of the electronic medical record throughout the primary care clinics for our health department, as well as starting with large PrEP practices such as the Kaiser system to look at PrEP utilization. We have data from our PrEP demonstration project in San Francisco, as well as starting to interview people who were newly diagnosed and asking them if they had heard about PrEP, whether they had access to PrEP in the past, and what were the missed opportunities, and whether they could have accessed PrEP at earlier time points. So these are data on new diagnoses and deaths in San Francisco. You can see that in San Francisco, we have about 16,000 living cases, and new infections have been on the decline, and most recently, in 2014, there were about 300 new infections. These are mostly, three-quarters of them were among MSM, 55% were people of color, and we have new infections occurring at both ends of the age spectrum, both younger folks under 25 as well as older folks. And so it really highlights the need for prevention for all ages. And then 11% of new diagnoses were homeless. In terms of deaths, we're seeing declining HIV-related deaths. However, alarmingly, we have been seeing increases in drug overdoses as well as suicides. And we're actually trying to do a systematic review of death certificates to better understand which of these deaths could have been preventable. This slide shows new HIV diagnoses. This is the number, not proportion, by race, ethnicity. And you can see that there are declines that are occurring among whites as well as African Americans, and those are significant declines. However, when we do look at the rates, we still see remaining disparities, and rates among African Americans as well as Latinos are up to 2 times higher than whites. Looking at a number of HIV care indicators in San Francisco, a number of them do appear to be improving in terms of HIV testing. The rate of unrecognized infections among MSM has decreased to about 3%. It's about 7% overall. Late testers has decreased to about 16%. And linkage to care within 3 months has increased up to 92%. Treatment initiation has, within 12 months of new diagnoses, has also increased, and the median time to viral load suppression has decreased. And this is our care continuum showing data from 2010 to 2013. And you can see that overall viral suppression rates among people diagnosed, new diagnoses within 12 months was about 67%. When we look at living cases just restricted to those that we know have not moved out of San Francisco, that's about 72%. So even though these indicators are improving, we are identifying a number of gaps, including lower linkage to care rates, retention and viral suppression among women, including trans women, African Americans and Latinos, as well as people who inject drugs, and also homeless persons was less likely to be on treatment. So now looking at the PrEP side of things, we've been trying to construct a PrEP cascade for San Francisco. There are about 15,000 MSM, and this is just for MSM. So there's about 15,000 MSM in San Francisco that we believe are at risk or would meet criteria for PrEP. Fortunately, we've seen a rapid rise in PrEP knowledge through, it's probably through word of mouth as well as various campaigns, such that about 85 to 90% of MSM are aware of PrEP now. Now, there's several next steps in the cascade that we don't have good data for, including what proportion want PrEP. And in our demonstration project, when people were offered PrEP, about 46% had chosen to take PrEP. We don't know about, of those who wanted PrEP, how many are actually being offered PrEP through their providers and how many can actually afford it. In terms of PrEP uptake, in various surveys, we see that also is steadily increasing, such that about almost 30% of MSM through various surveys appear to have been on PrEP in the last year. That's about over 4,000 individuals. And looking at adherence data from our demo project using dry blood spot testing, about 85% of those were retained and had protective dry blood spot levels. While each of those seem pretty encouraging, when you look at the overall rate of individuals who are achieving protective levels, it's only about a quarter, 25% of those at risk. And so it does suggest that we really need to work better on coverage. We also see gaps in the PrEP cascade, which are very similar to the treatment cascade, including lower PrEP knowledge or use among African Americans and Latino MSM women, including trans women, and particularly in youth under 25. And there have been a number of barriers that youth face in accessing PrEP, as well as people who inject drugs. So now I'm going to shift gears and end with two examples of using data to improve the cascade. First, for data to care, and as we've heard, the idea of data to care is using routine data collected through surveillance to improve programmatic efforts. We've been using this combined health department healthcare model, so lists are generated by both providers as well as through surveillance. And the goal is really to improve the workforce workflow efficiency. And so partner services and linkage to care can be focused on people who are truly new positives, and then navigation services can be focused on people who are truly not in care. And I think we've also heard in the discussion that each set of data are flawed and they have deficiencies. And so what we've learned is it's really important to try to triangulate the data to come up with the most accurate information. So this is just a flow chart of program implementation for data care, generating lists initially from several different primary care clinics within the Department of Health. And so here you can see that about 244 individuals were identified as not in care. And then that was matched, sent to surveillance, and through their database, they were able to match almost all of them. And they realized that a number were either getting care elsewhere or had returned to care independently over time or were moved away and were out of jurisdiction. So then the remaining folks were sent to a contact specialist who then did more direct outreach to try to locate these individuals. And as you can see on the left, that some additional number of folks were found to have returned to care independently, were moved out of jurisdiction, and some were unable to locate. And so then the remaining folks were then referred to our LINCS program for outreach. And so our LINCS navigation program has been in place for several years now, and the goal is to provide appropriate HIV-related medical and social services to optimize health and minimize transmission. And so they get their this refined list of individuals and navigators, and we've been able to expand our navigator workforce through CDC and various other grants. These navigators go out and locate patients. They're offered navigation services, and then providers are given patients are provided assistance to re-engage in care. And this is some data from an earlier period, 2012-2013, that DARP and SACHTA presented last year at this conference, showing that that about 116 individuals were enrolled in the program. 73% of them were able to be relinked, and 26% were not relinked. And you can see that viral suppression rates prior to engaging with LINCS was about 25%. However, it increased up to 64% among those who are relinked. Also, in those who are not relinked, it increased to 39%. So finally, I'm just going to talk about what we're trying to do around data to PrEP. First of all, we've seen some disparities in terms of PrEP knowledge and use, and so we're really trying to focus our outreach efforts in those areas. And so we have programs with using PrEP ambassadors to go and do outreach, several social marketing campaigns, as well as demonstration projects for youth, as well as transgender people. We're identifying individuals at risk who have rectal STIs or syphilis and who are not on PrEP, and we're adding PrEP to our reporting forms. And we realize we also need better data to help with the cascade, as well as what's happening with PrEP retention, as we're seeing some people just never get a PrEP prescription but never come back for further follow-up. Finally, people have asked about, like, what's the secret sauce of this consortium, and it's really the engagement of multiple sectors, you can see here, as well as having a passion for the outcomes and, of course, the data. So just to summarize, we are making significant progress in San Francisco. However, we also have significant disparities that remain, and we're really trying to maximize the use of local data to address these gaps. And really, collaboration between surveillance and program is really key. And so I'd just like to thank the Susan Cheer, who provided much of this data from surveillance, as well as folks in our disease and control prevention, and the co-chairs from each of our Getting to Zero committees. And this is our website if people want more information. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. So last we have Dr. Ruben Granich. Ruben,
Sorry,
go ahead.
Ruben's just going to push her off the stage here, sorry.
Put his own computer. It's okay. I work with him, so he's allowed to push me off the stage if he wants to.
Ouch.
No. Ruben is Vice President, Chief Technical Advisor at IAPAC, and he's been a driving force for several important interventions, including treatment as prevention and development of the 90-90-90 targets. With IAPAC, he works specifically on technical implementation of the Fast Track Cities Initiative and leads the development of the Fast Track Cities Initiative web portal and city dashboard, which you will now see a preview of.
Great. All right. So I'm not really a tech guy, and I'm really jet lagged. I was just in Paris and Mumbai and Bangkok and some other cities. I'm going to try and do the impossible here, I think, which is you know, float between four websites and a PowerPoint, and so this will be like a reality TV show. You know, you kind of like, you're hoping for me to kind of make it, but on some level you're looking for the crash and burn. So far so great. Yeah, look at this. Booyah! Awesome. All right, great. So thanks, everyone. Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, you're awesome back there for helping me out with that. Thanks, everyone, for coming. It's a really great opportunity to talk about Fast Track Cities Initiative a bit. And then also I wanted to demo the websites that we're building. And this is, I want you to know that this is a work in progress. The demo that you're going to see, they're not live. It's not on the web. And we're in an iterative process with the cities that we work with. So we're working with about 65 cities, but we're focusing on a couple of them first. Let me just show you quickly the slideshow here, because yeah, there you go. Yeah, okay. That's not really actually showing the right thing. It doesn't matter. It's fine. The talk that I'm about to give, you know, obviously is a team effort. Sindhu was the moderator. Soumya Gupta out in Delhi, Jose Zuniga, who's our CEO, and then we also work with Jure Technologies, which is a software group that's out in Mumbai. So it's really, really a team effort in putting these things together. And then there are other staff that I'm not mentioning who have collected a lot of the information. Fast Track Cities was launched in 2014. You all probably know about that. There was 27 cities then. Now there's about 65. And it involves four partners, Mayor of Paris, IPAC, UNAIDS, and UN Habitat. I wanted to just show the targets again, just so people who don't know about this, but we're focusing on 90-90-90, and then also, really importantly, zero stigma and discrimination. These are the cities that are listed, so you can see that they're both in the north and the south, and there, as I said, there's about 65 now. And then what I'm going to be focusing on now is basically on the M&E component of our five-point implementation strategy, and all this information is up on our website. So this is the part where I transition gracefully to, oh yeah, I should have wore that black turtleneck because I was thinking about, you know, Steve Jobs and Apple and how it was like just all flawless, but then these images of Bill Gates kept coming into my head, you know, and like the major crashes. Okay, so we're just going to be patient here, right? And maybe, that might have been it. I see the AV man approaching. You think I should try and unplug it? Yeah. As I'm seeing blank screen on my laptop. That's the problem.
Your screen?
Spinning down.
Power down, power back up.
No way. Relaunch? All right. Sorry, everyone. That's the sound you make when you power your computer down, and then you power it back up and start thinking about where all those sites are. Bummer days, man. I don't know why I did that. You gotta reload the websites. Nice picture, right? Sailing on the Chesapeake, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, yeah. Exactly as I imagined it. Okay. This should be... to reload these sites are going to be taking a minute. Painful. Painful stuff here. All right, so Naveen. Maurizio. I'm flailing.
While we wait, if it's going to take another couple of minutes, maybe we can take a question or two from you all for Sarah or Al. Yes.
Hi. What I was curious about, actually, and Al, you alluded it to alluded to it a little bit, but when you look at that picture of, you know, really getting your institutions on board for fast track, and then there seems to be a lot of culling across data that's happening even before that and then after that, how do you get the resources to do that? And Al, you had mentioned that the state had gone ahead or the city had gone ahead and actually resourced some of it, and I was wondering what that was like in Denver. I'm thinking about, you know, how would this articulate itself in my region, and constantly thinking about, okay, well, how does that actually get funded?
Your question was about
how do you get the resources to do that preliminary work that you're doing, or even the resources to do the work you do after you become a fast-track city? Because it doesn't come with finances, right?
Sadly, no.
Awesome. Yeah.
I know, but look.
You know, we've done our preliminary data collection through the BI tool that I mentioned, and that was primarily funded through State Health Department Prevention Fund, or State Health Department Fund. It's taken a lot longer to build, and it's been really challenging, so we're looking really at sustainability for that tool, and the more we can use it, I think the more we can keep it going, but it's been tremendously helpful for having our local access to our data.
That's
been funded.
But just to confirm, it's almost like once you become a fast-track city, then maybe it garners some of that political will to get the funding where it needs to be to do this?
Yeah, no, thanks for pointing that out. I think it's a huge benefit to being a fast-track city is to be able to feedback to your local funders, your state health department, your local health department, and say, it's really important that we be part of this global initiative, and we need this data because we can't really track our progress and we can't report it to the fast track collaborators if we can't track it and monitor it. So it gives us a little leverage in both ways.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I would just say in San Francisco that when Getting to Zero first started, that it was largely a volunteer effort, but very quickly, they realized the importance of political support and getting the city behind it, and so then the city came forward with an initial
I think it was like $1.2 million to support these initial initiatives. We were able to get a little bit of funding for Shannon Weber, who's our provides some time with for coordination, and that's been super helpful.
Thank you. I don't want to cut anyone off, but we got the website up and running, so we'll have a couple of minutes for questions at the end. But while we have the tech working,
yay.
I'll pass it back to Ruby.
Okay. So sorry about that. I really apologize for that. But I expected something like that, but maybe not as long, you know? So as part of the Fast Track Cities initiative, IPAC is working with the four partners to develop a global website and global portal. This site, actually, that you see right here will be where people from outside who are interested in HIV, urban cities, Fast Track, will come and they will see the see what we have presented. This, you'll see that there you have, roughly we'll have about 65 cities that are there. We will have mayor's messages here, and there you can see them popping through. We have the ability to map different indicators, and this is, again, on the global level, new HIV infections and these sorts of things. And then as you go down, you see the logo for the Fast Track Cities, and then here you see the global statistics, and then here you see the statement from our leadership, and then thank you to the sponsors. So that's your basic global site. Here we have data visualizations, and so again these are the global statistics. Here we have the national cascades kind of moving through, but eventually we will have city-based or city cascades. These are some statistics on the burden of PLHIV in the countries according to whether they're urban or not. You click on this, you get a nice pie. So we have charts and the ability to actually portray data in a very interesting way. And as we build, for example, you can do these sorts of things where you're basically adjusting the charts, and people will be able to use these charts to take a look at progress. And as we build the site, we'll get more and more data, and it'll get more and more interesting. All of these things will be downloadable into PNGs or into PowerPoints. The other part of this site is actually we have a list of all of the cities here. You'll be able to click on those cities. You'll be able to get information about the Fast Track initiative in those cities, and then you will be able to contact so that you can actually have twinning in between the two cities or technical exchanges. We'll have a resource page, obviously, which will have a whole series of documents and these sorts of things, and then we're going to have a news feed which will capture global HIV news, Fast Track Cities news, and then HIV and urban news, and then there's a contact here where you can contact the core partners. But I think the global site's important. It's actually it's a way to put our arms around all of these cities, and you can get rid of this. It's a way of putting our arms around the cities, but actually what's most important, I think, about that and this site is actually that it leads, it's a portal, basically, to the city sites. Now, again, this is a demo. We've been working with Paris on this, These sites are very basic right now, but at the end I'll show you a way that we can make them even more sophisticated. But the idea is to establish a basic site. So here you see the mayor's message here, and you have an indicator drop-down, which you can look at number of people that are in care. And here we're mapping for by arrondissement. Here you see the new people in HIV, total population. And as we work with the Paris technical team, we will expand these indicators to show what they're most interested in. Now, there's two perspectives on this site from the way that we look at it. One is with the city managers or the people that are managing the epidemic there. They have a committee, they have a strategy, and so they're going to want to know different things. The other is for the person that's living with HIV in the city or somebody who's concerned about HIV, and we have an application, an iPhone app, and we also have we've mapped some things so that it's useful for them. Or it's useful for everybody. You can see that we can map CBOs, screening centers, condoms, and hospital facilities. So we've already mapped all of those. Here you click on it, you can see all the information about that site, and you can give them a call if the phone number is listed and that sort of thing. If you want to drill down, it's all Google map based. So you drill down and you can see where you can click into it, and you can see where you are, and you can see what's around you. There's another feature of this site. So that's your basic site. So you just have to, we built this for Paris. We're in discussions with San Francisco, Denver, many other cities. We will build all these sites for all of our cities over time. We have a top 20 list right now. And it's going to have just basic information. You can see that down, you can see up here that we have data visualization, so we'll be showing their cascades and these sorts of things. But the most exciting part of this site, I think, the potential down the line, is something that's called, we call it iMonitor. And you can see this little thing here. You click on it, and what it does is it allows you, if you're either with the community or you, let's say you're a healthcare worker, you have an app where you basically put in whatever information you want into the app. So it could be, at the end of this week we had 20 new PrEP starts, or at the end of this week we tested 500 people and two of them were positive. Or it could be, I went to the clinic and there was a stockout. Or it could be, I went to the clinic and there was a people treating me. I got terrible service. The app has the ability to take photos. So, and for Paris, it may not be as important, but it might be. You can take photos of medicines that appear to be faulty. You can take photos of staff. It has a very powerful communications channel, and you also have the ability to speak with people that are using that, and to reach out to people that are using that that reporting. Now, this again, this is something that's in it's future speak, right? If a city wanted to do this, they could do this. If a community wanted to do this, and we're in discussions with cities to do that. But I think I think beyond the basic site, I think that this sort of thing, where you're actually getting feedback from the community or getting real time feedback from your healthcare workers about what's happening, and then it's being mapped in real time, and you can actually chart it and see it in real time, is really critical. The other aspect is that, so what happens? You make a report. Who's monitoring that? Well, for instance, in South Africa, sex workers are using it to talk about discrimination and maybe police abuse, and so that there's a community organization that's actually monitoring those reports and helping people get to legal services. In the instance where you're the program manager, you would monitor it. You'd get the SMS or the email thing that says that there's a stockout here or there, and then you would be able to reach out and talk to the person that is actually making the report, or send a message to the person taking the report saying, look, okay, if there's no HIV test there, you can go there. Now, some places are not going to have that sort of bandwidth to do that. Okay, so they don't reach out to the person that makes the report, but at least they call the facility to see whether there is medicines and these sorts of things there. The other part of the site that's interesting is that we're now, let me just go back a little bit here. We're now starting to in terms of the SDGs and social determinants, we're now starting to map various other indicators. So this is, this might look a little bit funny. You've got these little bubbles, but actually then you can start looking at where your CBOs are, where your screening centers are, et cetera. And so what I mapped there, those bubbles were poverty rate, dropout rate, these sorts of things. And then as a manager, you can start to look, are our services matched with where we're having some of our problematic social indicators. So you can see how powerful these sites will be, and we'll shape them. Now, Paris is interested in the social determinants and these sorts of things, but other cities may not have the data or may not be that interested. And the other thing is that for the person that's actually using this map, we'll also be able to interlay transportation grids and these sorts of things so they can actually get to the places where they want to go. I think that I've covered mostly what I wanted to show you. I wanted to show you one other thing. I just want to show you the data visualizations so that you can kind of see where we're heading with this. And then here we would have the continuum of care, and then we would have the rate of new HIV diagnoses. But again, I'm showing you a site that's basically about 50, 60% done. We're dialoguing with the city of Paris. They're going to tell us we want this, we want that, and they will shape that site. So, I think that's good. And then that'll leave us a little bit, about 5 minutes for questions or so. Thank you, everyone, for your patience, for sure.
Oh, yeah. right, thank you, and thank you all for hanging on despite some of the tech glitches. So we have about 5 minutes for questions, but our panelists have graciously agreed to stick around since we have a break coming up. So if you have questions and you want to stick around and ask those questions, you know, we can take the next 10 to 15 minutes to do that. So I see, just if you have any questions, there's a mic there, so if you just want to line up there, and we'll address it that way. So please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Great talks. Thanks very much. I have a quick question for those of you working in the cities. Very curious about the role of the state health department in your city's initiative, and has that been easy, or have you faced challenges in the coordination? Thanks.
So as I mentioned, in Colorado, about 75% of the epidemic is in the Denver metro. And we work very closely with our state health department. They're located in Denver, so we have close collaborations. They were supportive of Fast Track Cities and really also kind of used it as a springboard for their own proclamation to getting to zero. I think we're sort of in that formative stage, and we're looking at our own strategy and wondering, you know, 75% of the epidemic of Colorado is right here. Do we really need to make our own strategy, or is the Colorado strategy the Denver strategy? So it's, I think, something that's unique to some of the western states that maybe is a little different than a West Coast state.
Our state has also been very supportive of our efforts, and they most recently have been funding a number of PrEP initiatives for various CBOs and such to expand their navigator pools to be able to help with PrEP navigation. In terms of data to care, the local data that we collect from various jurisdictions is sent to the state, and through eHARS we do have access to that data. There is sometimes delayed reporting, but that does also help us to track people who are out of our jurisdiction but maybe being seen elsewhere. But overall, they are very supportive.
Just really quickly before we move on to the...
Sorry, I'll answer it too as well. Thanks a lot.
Sorry.
Yeah. So when we're conceptualizing this website and actually working with cities, we're very flexible. So we had the White House meeting where we actually brought in states, counties, and metropolitan areas. And we're actually we're in dialogue with the cities and taking a look at the entire context and then actually working with whoever makes the most sense. So for Paris, for example, it's not just Paris, it's Ile-de-France, which involves everything around it. So we have to be flexible here. The epidemic's going to involve an integrated approach. Thanks.
Thank you. Just really quickly before some of you have to leave, I wanted to mention that if your city's interested in signing up to the Fast Track Cities Initiative, please do contact Dr. Jose Zuniga, who's IAPAC's president and CEO, sitting over there, and you all know him.
Hello, this is Neela Goswami. I'm from Emory and work with City of Atlanta. I was really excited to hear from Albert specifically about some of the attention to the homeless with HIV in Atlanta. That's definitely it's definitely a problem that I think is under-recognized kind of more nationwide for lots of different reasons. The homeless people are, you know, often underrepresented in a lot of our surveillance measures and in the way we capture a lot of this data. Our problem is so big that in the past year, we had a large homeless TB outbreak where over a third of the population were HIV folks out of care. And I think it's something that should be at the top of our minds all the time. So this may be more a question for next steps or for future things, but looking to San Francisco as kind of the pioneer city that we model after, I'm curious about any efforts that have been brainstormed about or actually implemented in terms of working with homeless HIV patients out of care. I know a lot of our conversation has been around getting folks housing and stable housing, and part of what we see a lot of people who are chronically homeless, and so kind of to think about meeting people where they are in that level. And also just kind of as a plea to all cities to always remember to have someone representing the homeless folks at the table. We have a Fulton County HIV task force, and it was a big priority to put some homeless shelter directors and some folks representing that sector of population and efforts.
Yeah, thanks for your comments. So this definitely is one of the most critical issues that our retention and re-engagement committee is facing. And The group, which is led by Edwin Charlebois and Andy Scheer from the DPH, are really trying to work with the city and various agencies to figure out a way to address the housing crisis in San Francisco. And so they've approached the mayor, the director of health, as well as the mayor, with various proposals to really expand housing availability, as well as ensuring adequate mental health and substance use services, because those are also really lacking in San Francisco. And so they're trying to pull together a plan that that would, and a lot of this crosses not just HIV, but other, affects a number of different health conditions. And so they're really trying to look at this across different groups and try to come up with a plan. They've also been doing some qualitative work with people who are out of care and trying to understand from what their perspective, what do they think they need to be re-engaged in care, and that's also been a very informative approach. But it's definitely one of, in San Francisco, where housing prices have just been going crazy, that's a huge issue.
Sad. I think it's helpful to be a fast track city, to look at your mayor. This is what you committed to, but we have a housing crisis in Denver, so. You know, hopefully the public commitment to ending the AIDS epidemic will then translate to ending the causes of the AIDS epidemic.
You know, one thing just to mention that with the iMonitor function in our dashboard, basically you have the ability to assign unique identifiers. I'm not saying that that's a solution for the United States, but in other places like Kenya, they're using it for people who are using injecting drugs, and then that allows them, when they get their HIV test, to then go to the pharmacy, and then they scan a barcode, and then they go to the clinic to get their care, and they can follow them through that pathway. So this geolocating, this ability to actually real-time data report on those things actually might be part of the solution, although, of course, you have to think about the other implications of that.
Thank you. This was great presentations. My question, I would want to know more. It's directed to San Francisco. You had a stigma group in your consortium. I would like to know what activities are they doing, and among the activities they are doing, which is the most important thing to impact the stigma, bringing it to zero? Thank you.
Thank you. So our stigma committee is our newest committee that's formed, and so they have been trying to expand their membership. I think they have about 22 members now that's part of the stigma committee, and their first priority was to do a really deep dive needs assessment what are the areas that really need to be addressed around stigma. And so they're trying to do various, figure out what the best way to assess that is throughout the city. At the same time, they're also trying to come up with approaches to address stigma. And so one idea that people came up with was having a speakers bureau where people coming from different communities that have experienced stigma actually get support and training to be able to speak about their experiences, share their experiences, and how they were able to overcome some of the challenges. There was interest in creating digital stories of people, telling their stories and being able to share their stories of stigma so that that can be shared across community. And then finally, I think really importantly, is we were trying to get the stigma committee to work very closely with the other committees, because there's been a lot of PrEP-related stigma as well as stigma related to HIV treatment, and so we're really trying to integrate the work across the committees.
I'll try to be brief, because I think those 5 minutes are over, but this is a question for Ruben. I'm really excited by all the data that can be generated from those city pages. So I'm wondering if, as part of the calculation of the continuums for each city, are you standardizing the definition so that everybody will kind of show the continuum with the same definitions? And if you also have like a city profile of basic stats that would then allow you to be able to compare, you know, morbidity and characteristics of the epidemic across these cities. That's incredibly exciting that you have this international perspective. So I'm wondering what you have.
Thanks for the question. I'll give you your money later. We have, so one of the sites that I didn't get to, this is the funny thing, one of the sites that I didn't get to show you is that we're going to launch an HIV 90-90-90 watch. So we already have HIV policy watch site. It has the world's largest, IPAC has the world's largest repository of HIV policies, and so we map that, and then you're able to compare across countries. So we're going to do that for 90-90-90 for the national cascades. And in that site's very exciting because we talk about the methodology for each one of the indicators for each one of the countries that we're mapping out of the public domain, so you can see actually how people are calculating things. We use the IPAC guidelines as our, that many of you were involved in. We use that along with the WHO. We will use those guidelines to calculate the city cascades. That being said, some cities will want their cascades portrayed in their fashion, but when we do the cross comparisons and the giant tables, league tables, and these sorts of things, there will be a standardized methodology. Otherwise, you get the oranges and the apples that everybody sees. So I think that answers your question, I hope. And it's going to be really exciting to compare and also cities. I think the most exciting thing about Fast Track Cities is that the cities we're hoping and we know that in the future, like Amsterdam and San Francisco and Nairobi and let's say Kigali, or, you know, these cities are going to be communicating across this initiative with or without us and then exchanging technical information and be able to see it on the site because it'll build up over time. It's a wiki site. So. Anyway, thanks for the question.
I just want to add to that more of a concrete example. So for 90-90-90, the middle metric is of those who are diagnosed, number of people who are, or percent of people who are taking ART. We don't have universal access to pharmacy data, so we do have access to labs with the inherent problems with using labs as a proxy for engagement in care. It's, right now it's the best thing we have. So we've decided that our 90-90-90 is going to be retention in care, and it does create an apples to oranges comparison in some ways, although the ultimate product of 90 times 3 or 95 times 3 is 86%. So we get there, and we feel that retention for us is what we most need to look at. And then of those retained, everyone should be on treatment. So, but I think I really have thought a lot about that point as well. And if it turns out that ART measurement is what we should be doing, then we'll need some technical assistance to figure out how best to do that. Claims data is one option. Chart review, if we can get some, yeah, right, that seems hard. So we're open to options and sharing ideas, but right now we're doing a slight variation of the 90Q.
And the only thing to add there is as long as you're actually saying how you're doing the measurement, then people can use judgment. It's where you actually compare two cascades and you have no idea how they've calculated the cascades. That's, I think, where you have the most major problems. But.
Hey, thank you all for sticking around a couple minutes later into our panelists, as well for great presentations and an engaging discussion. If I can also just remind you, we have a poster session at 5:30 p.m., so hope to see you all there, and then an opening reception at 6:30 p.m. So, thank you.